Good evening. I'm getting better at getting that stuff on. Thank you, Pastor. We're in James chapter 4 tonight. What is the real problem is the time of the lesson, and the real problem is selfishness. Sometimes it's hard for us to admit, but if we can admit it, we can find a solution real quick. James chapter 4, verses 1 through 3, the source of most of our problems. Verse 1, what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? Yes, right to the point, you know. I mean, why is all this fighting and squabbling and conflicts? Why is everybody all stirred up? Because they're not getting their way. You know, they want their way. And you get more than one person involved in what? It's a fight. It's a quarrel. You know, so what is the source of quarrels and conflicts among you, the church, here, the Jewish church? Is not the source your pleasures that wage war in your members? I mean, you're all stirred up about wanting this, and, you know, you want it worse than the other person wants it, and they want it too. Verse 2, you lust, and you do not have, so you commit murder. You want it really bad, and you don't have it. But you really want it bad, and you're a Christian. The rules don't really, they don't mean that, really. You got to start going beyond the rules. And the reason you're going beyond the rules is because you want it so bad that you can forget the rules. No matter how you get it, have to get it, you can get it. You're going to do it. And so he says, you lust and do not have, so you commit murder. I mean, that's the extreme. But you're going to do it, and it don't matter how it works out. You want it really bad. And so you're going to go for it. And nobody's going to stop you. You know, the family needs a new car. Husband wants to get a sporty model. Expensive sporty model. The wife wants to get a family car, since we got several kids here. The husband don't want to give up the sporty car. Where's that going? That's not going to lead to harmony and all, you know. And it's all because we want this. We don't need it. It's totally useless, but we want it. And so there starts the conflict. One person trying to stand for soberness and right and what's best. The other person wanting what they want. Secondly, in verse 2, and you're envious and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. I mean, other people are doing better than you, and they're living a lot better, and you're struggling, and you become envious of them. No, that's not going to stop with you just feeling envious and wishing you had it and wishing they didn't and wishing they wrecked their new car and hope they got a new dent in it. Oh, they do have a new dent. Wow. You know, you feel pleasure in the fact that's envy. And so you can't get it. So you start nitpicking it, you know. And you start explaining how it's not really a good car or whatever. And the fights and the quarrels that can linger. And it's all because you can't have it. You don't make enough money. You've spent too much. You got more bills than you can pay. So you can't buy another one. And so you're envious. Thirdly, in verse 2, you do not have because you do not ask. You're talking to Christians who has a father who knows what they need before they ask. And so the bottom line is you haven't thought about God. As you turn into selfish attitudes, you begin to distance yourself from the thought of God. And the more you want it, the more you can distance yourself and justify some things you shouldn't be doing. You do not have because you do not ask, verse 3. You ask and do not receive because you ask with wrong motives, so that you may spend it on your pleasures. And so when you do pray, it's a total selfish motive. And you know how far that goes? Nowhere. And the motives matter. You know? And life has a way of beating you down. You know, into submission where all so many things you want, you just can't get. You know, I can remember when I got married, I had a brand new Corvette. You know? Life changed drastically and suddenly the first week. And to this day, I have no idea how Aline ended up driving that Corvette, and I'm driving her old Green Rammer. one of the mysteries of life, you know, but she was working in the city and her old car, it rained and it would start missing. You know how old cars are. So I ended up with the old car. Oh, and I got even with her. She decided to want to have a baby. You know, I'm not used to know anything about all that. But the day she come home from the shower with her mother station wagon full of presents, that Corvette went on the market the next day. And she ain't figured out to this day how I sold it out from under her. But I saw it. It's like you have an epiphany, you know. We've got to have a bigger car. All this other stuff is gone. You know, life has a way of forcing you into reality and soberness and get rid of things you really think you need to have, you know. And you have God. If you don't forget Him, He's going to give you what you need. And you look at 1 Timothy chapter 4, a couple of verses in 1 Timothy. The New Testament teaches you how to sober up and how to change your attitude. Second dream in my life was to live on a fairway on a golf course, and after we got married, I ended up out there. And I went from there to living $600 a month in the school of preaching. But you think you'd want those things. You think you need them. And it's a wonderful view, and the cats are playing in the sandbox out there in the sand traps. But you know what? As a Christian, you change. And that's not important. First Timothy chapter 4, verse 4 and 5, or verse 3 through 5. Men who forbid marriage and advocate abstaining from foods which God has created to be gratefully shared in by those who believe and know the truth. God creates things to be shared in, to enjoy, in 1 Timothy 4:3. And if you're grateful, I mean, you're thankful to have what you have, no matter how little, how big. I mean, if you're rich, you have more temptations than the poor man has. He can be envious, but if you're rich, you can have some real problems rather than appreciating what God has done for you. And he talks about in verse 3 about being grateful shared in by those who believe and know the truth. That's why God created them. Verse 4, for everything created by God is good, and nothing is to be rejected if it is received with gratitude, for it is sanctified by the means of the word of God in prayer. And so everything is for our benefit, to bless us, to help us get by in life, to learn and to enjoy what you have. It is a tremendous blessing. Look at 1 Timothy chapter 6. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 6. But godliness actually is a means of great gain when accompanied by contentment. Being able to be content. If you're always chasing after something, you never can be content. You never can enjoy what you have. And so it's a great lesson. You know, verse 8, where we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. You know, you just need the basics. You need to be able to quit chasing. And things cost so much more today, and I understand all that. And it takes so much effort just to get by, and who knows what's coming, you know. But learning to be content and learning that you have a real relationship with God, and if you're really in need, all you have to do is ask. In James chapter 4, verses 4 through 6, what we do not realize about this, what's being described in chapter 4, verse 1 through 3, is talking to Christians, but he's describing the world. This is normal in the world, and we tend to pick up what they do, and they don't have God listening to their prayers. They're using meaningless repetition, which is not going to get them anything. And so all they have is what gives them status now. And so they're chasing after more and more. Chapter 4, verse 4, you adulteresses, do you not know that friendship with the world is hostility toward God? Therefore, whoever wishes to be a friend of the world makes himself an enemy of God. You're unfaithful if you love the world more than you love God. If you love something, it becomes an idol. It becomes your God if you love something more than God. And he says you're adulteresses. I mean, you know, the friendship with the world makes you an enemy of God. Y'all are fighting against each other. These things are just created. They can burn up. You can wreck the car. You know, hundreds of things can happen. They're just temporary. And they're just to be enjoyed. And to really want it bad to where you begin to go over the lines and you begin to fight with people, something's wrong. Where did that come from? It come from the world. Verse 5, or do you think the Scripture speaks to no purpose? He jealously desires the Spirit which He's made to dwell in us. You know, you want your wife looking at somebody else? No. I mean, God give us the Spirit of God. We're His children. We're His. He's tied to us, and He wants us to make it eternally. And He's jealous about that in a good sense that we're His. And He wants us to love Him more than we love something, like Ezekiel and the idols. There's no difference. I mean, things are great and wonderful. You know, you can buy a fancier car, you got lower luxury, you ride better, you get a better bed to sleep on. Oh, that's nice, but what? You'd be thankful you had the money to buy it. You know, think it's just a bed. It's just a car. It's no more than that. You know. Verse 6, but He gives a greater grace. Therefore, it says, God is opposed to the proud, but gives grace to the humble. I mean, Christians become selfish. And he doesn't want, he wants them on His side. He wants them loving Him. So He gives a greater grace to overcome, to realize how secure you are in eternity, how saved you are. God's opposed to the proud, He gives grace to the humble. If you can be humble, you know God's going to help you. That freely, unlimited, He's going to help you because you're not about selfishness. It's not about you. There's more involved. You're aware of other people and their needs. And you can put other people first. So God's not against you. He is against the worldly people. Because that's their God. You know, now the solution, verse 7 through 10, the way back is to God's favor. Their enemies of God. They're hostile to God as long as they continue doing what they're doing. He's got a 6-step program. Alcoholic Anonymous, he's got a 12-step. Well, he's got 6, and the 7th one will include, one of them will do all of them. So, the first one, verse 7, when you're in trouble spiritually, this is what you do. Number 1, submit therefore to God. You know, realize that you're wrong. And realize that this is not going anywhere good. And if I continue to practice it, I'm going to get better at it. And I'm going to end off somewhere lost. Well, you submit. You yield to God. We're working through other people and working with somebody in Montana who's been a drug addict. And drug addicts and people like that are the worst of people. And there comes a moment in their life where they get an opportunity to face God and be saved and have a chance to make it to heaven. But the odds are against them. And so they've been helping here, and we give them verses. And these guys studied, end up being baptized. And all of a sudden he changed for the worse. Oh, I come to find out he wasn't a mild drug user. He was into heroin before. Then there were 3 felonies in Oregon against him, pending how he shapes up here in Montana. You know, and we were discussing and trying to help him see, and they were feeling so sorry for him. And if you're a bad person and you get a chance, you got to submit completely, or you're never going to make it. Never. I mean, you have so many demons and you have so many obstacles and so many ways out. Without submitting wholeheartedly, it's a matter of time before you leave. And the point is the same to you and me. That when we begin to realize we're selfish, we now know the problem. We now know the solution is I need to submit to God. It's an inward yielding completely to God. It's not hedging, it's not holding back. But if you're willing to do what the Lord wants done, He can lead you now. Otherwise, He can't help you. So number 1, you have to submit to God. Number 2, resist the devil and he'll flee from you. Once you submit to God, we're going this direction. Our decision is made. It's clear. There's no way out. Now we got to resist the devil. Most people don't believe you can overcome. They think because of the habits they have that they can't overcome. Why don't you put up some resistance? Why don't you yield to God, get God involved, and resist? Jesus is more powerful than the devil. Look at Luke chapter 8. Luke chapter 8, verse 28. You remember the man that counted legion? He lived in the tombs, and he was naked, and he had just bunches of demons in him. And notice what he says, and the demons speaking through him in Luke chapter 8, verse 28. And it expresses the power of Jesus known by the demonic world. And we're sitting here, I can't overcome evil. Well, with Jesus, what's the demon going to do? What's the devil going to do? Luke chapter 8, verse 28. And seeing Jesus, he cried out and he fell before him and said, Son of the Most High God, I beg you not to torment me. What does the demon immediately do? He pleads that Jesus doesn't use the authority he has to torment him. You know, he don't want anything to do with Jesus. There is an immediate reaction to Jesus. So if Jesus tells you to resist the devil and he'll flee, what? That's probably going to happen. You're probably going to get strength to overcome. Well, look at Acts chapter 19. Acts chapter 19, verse 15. You remember the sons of Sceva, they were Jewish exorcists, and they were trying to cast out demons, and they said, I adjure you by Jesus, whom Paul preaches. And the demon-possessed person has an answer to that nonsense. I like those TV people saying, you just tell the devil, I rebuke you. Go ahead. I'll pop you real quick right now, you know. Because there's no humility. There's no submission to God. There's just arrogance. And notice the sons of Sceva trying this stuff, verse 15. And the evil spirit answered and said to him, I recognize Jesus and I know about Paul, but who are you? They didn't put up with that nonsense. We know who Jesus is. We heard about Paul, that he has authority and he's doing all these miracles. But who in the world are you? You know, well, the point is, look at 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 5. That you and I have power available. We have a relationship with Jesus. And therefore, he wants us to make it to heaven. He doesn't want the devil to overrun our lives and continue to hold us in bondage. 1 Peter chapter 1, verse 5. Who are protected by the power of God through faith for a salvation ready to be revealed in the last time. We're protected by the power of God, but it's through faith. It's through the exercising of our convictions based on verses. If we have a conviction that I resist the devil and he'll flee, and I believe that verse is still in James 4:7, you know what you'll do? You'll put up some resistance and you'll find that you're dependent on Jesus and he'll have to deal with Jesus. You know, it's like accusing the brethren in Revelation 12. So they want to accuse you. You got to take it through Jesus to God. And you're faithful and you're honest. You may be weak, but you're honest. How do you think that's going to turn out? Well, number one, you got to submit. You got to quit going on your own and being selfish and trying to solve all your problems and gain everything you want by doing what you're doing. You need to fall back in line with God and let him lead here. We probably won't make as many mistakes. We probably won't be tempted as much. And then when the devil comes along, we're going to resist. And he's going to flee. Number three, verse 8, draw near to God and he'll draw near to you. These are things you have to do. You have to draw near to God first. You've got to show some desire to be close to him. You show it and he'll draw near to you. But you have to, what do you want? Where your treasure is, that's where your heart will be. Matthew 6:21. Whatever you value most, your life's going there like a magnet. It's going to pull you right there. So you submit to God, you resist the devil, and then you want to have a closer relationship with God so you draw near. And guess what? All of a sudden you realize that that's where you're at. Number four, verse 8, cleanse your hands, you sinners. Old James in the Old Testament prophet style. You got to quit doing wrong. You know, Lord, I want a new car here, and I'm really in bad shape, and I'm going to depend on you, but I've got a few things over here that I kind of feel like to do is wrong. Here on the phone, click, you got dial tone. There are no answers coming to that. You got to Ephesians chapter 4, you know, verse 28, that the person used to be a thief needs to quit stealing. And he needs to work with his hands, performing something good so he may have something to share with those in need. He's got to quit the stealing. If he's going to make progress as a Christian, he's got to cleanse his hands and get rid of that stuff. Number 5 there in verse 8, and purify your hearts, you double-minded. You can't have it both ways. You can't be one moment I'm for the Lord and one moment it's hell hopeless. You've got to get that out. Either you're for him, he's for you, or forget it. And so there has to be an inward cleansing of what do I really want? What is the source of my happiness, my blessings, my eternity? You know, lots of times we have problems. Anxiety comes in and our faith begins to waver. So we'll go ask somebody, what do you think here? And somebody will listen to Oprah, you know, Dr. Phil. And Lord, you got to cleanse your hearts too. We're wholeheartedly, I'm going with the Lord. I'm dependent on Him completely. And at least you know other avenues. You're going to make progress. Verse 9, be miserable and mourn and weep. Let your laughter be turned into mourning and your joy to gloom. Get serious here. You know, cut out all that stuff. I mean, focus on the Lord. And the hopelessness out here in the world, it may get dark, but guess what? Get serious about the Lord. Focus on the Lord. And you know what all this is called? Verse 10. Humble yourselves in the presence of the Lord and He'll exalt you. It's called humbling yourself. It's allowing God to be God. Now God's God. Jesus rules heaven and earth. But in the Christians, he don't necessarily get to rule. And so the Christians end up being selfish. And they end up wanting things they shouldn't be wanting. And they want them really bad. And so right or wrong is not a real issue, even though they're a Christian. And they forget that they could ask God. They forget about prayer. They're not really trying to maintain a relationship because they want something that they know they shouldn't be going after. Or they're too excited about something. They should be more sober and patient, waiting for it at the right time. But if you humble yourself in the presence of the Lord, He'll exalt you. You know, you look at 1 Peter chapter 5, verse 6 through 8, same discussion. Humble yourself. God's opposed to the proud. He has graced the humble. In 1 Peter 5, 6, humble yourselves, therefore, under the mighty hand of God, that He may exalt you at the proper time. The mighty hand of God. You want it now. It's like a job, but you don't get it. So you quit the church. You blame God. You know, but you're getting by. And you know what happens? Later, when the economy turns bad, you get the job. The whole plant got closed down, but you got another job. At the proper time, you got exalted. Because you humbled yourself, you continued to do the right thing, you continued to trust in God, and you didn't waver. Well, at the right time, He'll exalt you if you stay humble. I mean, there's hope always. And at the moment you need it the most, that's when it's coming. It's worth a lot more at that point. Verse 7, sure, you're going to be anxious during all that period, casting all your anxiety upon Him because He cares for you. I mean, just because things are bad doesn't mean He didn't care for you. There's 100 reasons why you're not getting what you want. You know, maybe you need to be tested. Maybe you need to be humbled. You know, maybe you need to fail so that you depend on the Lord more. I mean, there's a lot of reasons going on out there. And we can sure get anxious about it, and we forget that He cares about us. And that He's our outlet. We can cast our cares on Him. We can get free of all the fears and the worries, and you know you'll make better decisions. I mean, you won't go running off wild and compound your problem. Because you cast your cares on Him, Verse 8, be of sober spirit, be on the alert. Your adversary, the devil, prowls about like a roaring lion seeking someone to devour. Bottom line, that's why you submit to God. I mean, you can be in the church and you can lose your soul. Revelation chapter 2 and 3, 5 of the 7 churches are told to repent, or I'm coming quickly. Something's been going on for a while. Well, the church of Ephesus has only been 7 years. Only 7 years from when Ephesians was written. It's only been 4 years since Timothy showed up trying to correct it. In the downward spiral from 62 to 69, they're now told to repent. You know, and so you need to be a sober spirit. You need to be alert. You don't need to be out chasing something wild and reckless and that's dangerous, that's hurtful, that's risky. You need to be sober in your thinking. You need to be on the alert because you can get out there vulnerable and the devil can take everything you got and nobody cares. And then he takes your soul too at the same time. So what's the real problem? It's selfishness. But if we understand when we're being selfish, we can let it go real quick. And all of a sudden the clouds are gone, storms passed, and we know where we stand and why we don't want what we want now. Jesus, all the things he put up with, he didn't want to put up with them. In the Garden of Gethsemane, what? He's looking for a way out. I mean, he's a man, and he's feeling the pain of being separated from God, but not thy will be done, my will done, but thy will be done. No matter what, I'm going to submit to you. No matter what. In the submission comes power. Because you're not striving. You're yielding. And God has his greatest chance of getting his will done. His will was for Jesus to die a horrible death. It wasn't for selfish reasons. It was to save the sinful world. He had a greater goal in mind, and Jesus could yield to it. My God, why hast thou forsaken me? I mean, perfectly innocent and couldn't understand how. You know, because you're human and you're feeling this, and you know you're going to be separated from God, and darkness is horrible out there. So he puts his trust in God. And God raised him from the dead. And he said, go into all the world and preach the gospel to every creature. He has believed and has been baptized shall be saved, but he has disbelieved shall be condemned. I mean, what does people want? What do you want? Do you want to be saved? Or are you too busy? Today, well, people saying there really wasn't ever a Jesus. The devil make it easy. Oh, he's going to make it easy for people not to even think about spiritual things. When all the time, if they got sober, they just listened. I mean, there's a fellow named Jesus who lived in the first century. Oh, there was a whole nation of Israel. And there's hundreds of pages in our Bible of history, of world history, centered around one little old nation, the people of God who ended up lost. Majority of them ended up rejecting Jesus. Oh, they wanted glory. They wouldn't even use religion to get what they want. Oh, they pray on the street corners so everybody could see how righteous they were, and they give a lot of money and everybody could see it. Jesus sitting there looking, and a little widow puts in a couple little coins. And she put in more than them all put together. God doesn't look at it the way the world looks at it. The world looks at status and prestige and how much you have and who you are. Luke 16. He told the Pharisees who were lovers of money. That was the point. Rich man. He never thought of the beggar. Never gave him a thought that he might be hungry outside his gates. And he lived in extreme luxury and pleasure. And then they both died. They just buried that guy and probably had a pretty good funeral. And then in Hades, he found religion. Yeah. Go tell my brothers, don't come to this place. Tell them to change. To do whatever they got to do not to come here. No, he was too busy in this life doing what he did. He had the means to do it. The poor beggar. I mean, dogs licking his sore. I mean, humiliation. But somehow that guy maintained faith in God, and angels came when he died and carried him away to Abraham's bosom. Oh, I'm sure the beggar had a lot of desires. Oh, his first one was to eat some of the crumbs off the rich man's dirty floor. Not a great goal in life, but a great need. And not choosy either. Sometimes you're better off with less than more. If you got more, you're better off with God being more important than what you have. That it's come from God, and that you're so grateful to have it, and you're going to use it in good ways. You figure you'll probably end up in heaven too. Need to respond anyway. Won't you come as we stand and sing?